Welcome along to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. How is the Caramel Kid?
What is White Devil up to?
He's he's at home relaxing. It's a Monday. This we're recording the day this is going out, so this is almost live, except for a few hours.
Fresh out the kitchen.
Letting you guys have a little look behind the curtain here. We are recording on Monday morning. We're looking forward to doing the show. I've been training hard, Jermaine. I've been training very hard. I'm getting ready for this big half challenge, man. I am now running, I think, pretty good. But two good sessions last week. I did 8x2K. 8x2K in marathon pace with a K float in between each. I managed 7, mainly because, I was just starting to get a bit tired. And the last training for Frankfurt, I just absolutely hammered myself every time. Do you remember? I left it all on the training field rather than leaving it all on the marathon field. So, I thought, it's got to 7. I was slowing down. I thought, right, I'm going to stop. That's what I did. So that was all right. And I did 34K this weekend, which included some bits and bobs at marathon pace. But it's been nice to get some people talking on Strava. Had some nice comments from Andy Hobdall. He gave me some tips on my training. I think he's a great coach. He coached Andy Bradley. He's the world... Well, everyone uses the world parkrun record holder as his first thing, but he is a great 5,000 meter runner, and he went to the Olympics.
That's a good record, the Bushy Parkrun world record.
But for me, he went to the Olympics. He was amazing. He's a great athlete. So Andy was his coach, and Andy obviously coaches a lot of marathoners now. Like I know Kev Seward, the Irish runner, he's coached by Andy, and a few other top runners. So he's a good person to pick his brain. So thanks, Andy, for the advice on Strava. But enough about me, man. I'm just talking all about my training. What's your training doing? Are you ready for the big half?
Mine's been the opposite to yours, because I was thinking, look, I haven't been training like a professional. Yeah. So I don't want to overwork myself. So at the moment, I'm winding down for the race. Because I did a long run. Last week, I did 1 hour and 10. I was like, I feel tired. Yeah. Then I was thinking, I better save it for the race. So I'm winding down, so I'm going to be taking it easy this week, doing a 30-minute run.
Okay, nice. We have only got a week to go to the big half. We're going to be together, Jermaine. We're going to have to record an intro live together. It's going to be interesting. We're going to meet a lot of people down there. Hopefully Greg from the Cloud 259 podcast.
Before or after?
Before or after. Yeah, well, maybe a bit of both, yeah. But Greg is going to be there. Greg, who we are challenging in the Battle of the Podcasts from Cloud 259. Check out their show, guys. Great listen. He's going to see us there. We're going to meet him. Hopefully, we're going to take him down, Jermaine, on the race. But he'll be there. But if you want to join in the Battle of the Podcasts, help Let's Get Running be crowned the fastest podcast on the scene.
And to explain the categories again. Explain, there's 3 categories, isn't there?
There's 3 categories. So there's the fastest hosts. That's me and Jermaine. We've got to do our own bit of work there. Jermaine, obviously,
Combined time versus the other hosts.
Yeah, so you're relying on me, are you, Jermaine, now? You're putting your feet up and relying.
Hey.
There's an athlete in there somewhere.
I'm going to steal your thunder, don't worry.
So that's one category. Second category is the next 10 fastest runners. We've managed to recruit Andy Maud. He's a good runner. We know him. He was second at the national last year. He's running Brighton this year. He did do one half marathon, but it was in the end of February, so he can't count that. He's got to do another one. So he's going to do one for us. We've also got Paul Martelletti. He's going to run for us. So we've got some good runners in there for that category. Then the final category is number of competitors competing. So if you are running a half marathon, it doesn't matter if you're going to run 2 hours 30 or 1 hour 10. 1 hour 5. Doesn't matter what you're doing. We need you to declare your interest for us, and you can do that.
Declare your love and devotion.
Exactly. Yeah? We ask a lot of you lot. We're always asking for reviews. No, we don't really ask for that much. We're giving you this for free. We want you to go onto the Strava group, which is the link I will send out. Look on my Twitter page, but also go on the show notes for this show. letsgetrunning.co.uk/podcast. You can join the Strava group, the Battle of the Podcast Strava. You can join ours at the same time. Why not? Bit of fun. And then when you do your half marathon, make sure you register that it was for Let's Get Running. It was a half marathon and it was an entry in the Battle of the Podcast race. You can do that by editing the description of the run. Really simple.
It could be any half marathon. It has to be this one.
Any half marathon. Any half marathon in the month of March. we need you to do it. Get your friends to do it. Get your mum to do it. Get your gran if she's running a half marathon.
Whoa, whoa. Zimmer. There's no Zimmers, gran.
There's no Zimmers. But we do. I know there's grans out there that are doing running. My mum's a gran. She runs half marathons. So if you're a granny and you can run a half marathon, we want your support to do that. So look at the show notes. Nice one.
Is she a gilf?
Is she? What the? I'm not even going to give that an answer. I'm just going to move on. But anyway, how's work been? You been all right?
Crazy. So let me tell you my story. First off, I was getting on the underground to go to work. Yeah. And I said, you know, let me get my game out and play on my phone. And it dropped on the platform and it landed on the tracks.
No.
I was like, fuck. Yeah. And I, you know, like, I did, second thought, I was like, I just jumped straight down there and got it and jumped back up.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh. And then I remember some woman saying, telling the children, whatever you do, never jump on the tracks. And I was thinking, woman, are you crazy? This is a £200 phone. And that's not even expensive for a phone, right? But I was thinking, you're damn right, I'm getting that back. Yeah. So, All my screens cracked, so all heartbroken and stuff. So I'm like, you know.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, okay, it's not a top-end phone, so it's fine.
Yeah.
So when I'm going to work, driving the bus, and I'm stuck in traffic across Waterloo Bridge.
Yeah.
And there's this homeless guy sitting there, obviously, begging for money. And I always look at them to see if they're really poor. You know, like you look at their trainers, you look at their nails and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And he was quite clean. I'm saying, I don't think he's poor, but he's obviously begging. He's begging.
Yeah.
And then when no one was like, stopped walking past, he got his phone out and it was a blibbid iPhone X. So that's like that's a £1,000 phone. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's talking and he's laughing and he's waving. I see, who's he waving? I look across the road. There's his mate begging as well on the other side of the bridge. And they're talking to each other.
Busted.
I was like, wah! I said, we should swap phones.
Beggars can have phones too, but if you're begging and you're spending that much money on phones, you need to reprioritize what you're spending money on.
Yeah. Maybe they're good at what they do.
Very good. I had this isn't a similar story, but like I was in Spain 1 year, right? And I was on this tube thing, and I was wearing quite a pair of skinny jeans, as you do when you're a young man. And there's this old guy get on the tube, and some guy sitting down on the I was standing up. There's a guy sitting down, and he pointed over to me and said, "Excuse me, that old man's got his hand in your pocket." And this old man was trying to get his hand, and lucky them jeans were tight, otherwise he'd have my phone straight away.
But he couldn't get to rob you.
He was trying to rob me, but he had his hand in my pocket, and we both looked at each other, his hand in my pocket. Standing there, him handing it on my phone, and then he kind of just took it out. But then obviously we've got a whole journey to make. Do you know what I mean? So we had to just stay looking at each other until the next stop. And I didn't know what to do, like, cause this is an old guy. Like, I'm not gonna, I'm a lover, Jermaine, not a fighter. So I just looked at him and I was like, what am I supposed to say to this guy? He can't speak English. He's just stolen my phone. And then the only thing I could think to do was just to tread on his toes to get him back. So I just trod on his toes and he went ape shit at me. it was really funny. What do you do to an old man tries to take your phone? God knows.
In my head, yeah. I've got you standing there with someone with their hands in your pockets. That just looks like he's trying to touch your wig.
Well, he might have been, but he also was after my phone, the cheeky beggar.
He might have been. He just take which one is bigger, yeah?
Definitely the phone. Definitely the phone. Anyway, enough chat about my phone being stolen. Let's move on. But today's interview is an interesting one. We are going to interview Marianne Heading. Now, Marianne, she recently won a crazy race out in Canada. So she ran 300 miles, right, carrying or pulling a sled with like all her camping equipment and that sort of thing. 300 miles in sub-zero temperatures towards the Arctic Circle in northern Canada. And it was crazy, but I was chatting to her, I was thinking, she was talking about her training and her how she made it specific, and she was saying how she got some funny looks because during the summer she'd strap a tyre to herself and run around the local town centre with a tyre dragging on behind her. So I was thinking, in terms of our chat, Jermaine, I wanted to chat about specificity and how you include specificity, how you make your training specific to the challenge that you're doing. So I thought I'd have a chat about, I know her challenge is completely different to say your challenge when you're a steeplechaser, but I thought it would be interesting to chat about how you made your training specific to your 3,000 meter steeplechase challenge.
Okay.
So when you were at the top of your game, so how many times a week were you on the barriers when you were doing that sort of thing?
We did just step over hurdles, you know, like hurdle drills and stuff.
Yeah.
We did that religiously once a week.
Right. For how long?
Even through this, all year round.
Okay. Right.
So like, obviously we did that religiously. So we just used to do that every Friday. Yeah. And obviously when we had a big race, we just wouldn't do it on the Friday.
Okay.
But we did that really. Yeah. In the summer, you just cut it back.
How long a session though? Is it quite like you do half an hour of drills or whatever?
So we must do like 20 minutes of drills and then 30 minutes of. Hurdle drills, and then at the end when you're tired, then you go over the hurdles, because it was trying to represent you know, when you go in a race you're tired, you need to go over the hurdles tired.
Yeah.
Because when you go over the hurdles fresh, they're easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard. But in terms of running, because when you do a hurdle session, it sort of takes away from your fitness training, because you think, if I just run on the flat, I'm going to get fitter and faster.
Yeah.
But if I do a steeplechase session, I'm not necessarily going to get fitter, but I'll get a better rhythm.
Yeah. Okay.
So it was a compromise to what we did. We did do one session on Saturdays. We were doing like 4x a K over hurdles. But towards the end, I figured out doing a 50-50 was probably the better sessions to do.
Okay.
So whatever session you're doing, say if you're doing 6x a K.
Yeah.
You do three of them over hurdles and three of them on the flat.
Okay.
So you do one on, one off, one on, one off.
Okay. That sounds makes sense.
Or if you do 200s, you do 30 200s or 20 200s, you do half and half. So we just call it 50-50.
Okay. All right.
So when you do your on the flat, you try and run it a little bit quicker, then race pace when you're doing the steeplechase. And then obviously when you're over the hurdles, you're doing race pace.
Yeah, okay. And so, was that the whole... You'd only do that in the summer, though, right? You wouldn't do that in the winter?
That stuff would be in the summer. In the winter, I found just trying to incorporate hurdling when I was doing my long runs. So what I would do is just find, like, dead-end barriers, you know, like that block roads off.
Yeah, nice.
So I would try and use, like, urban stuff. So if I'm running around, I think, okay, which roads are dead end? So when I was doing my running loops and stuff, I was thinking I'd just try and change it a bit to go across these like dead end barriers.
Really?
So say in the morning when I was doing my 40-minute run in the morning,
yeah,
I'd just try and do that twice when I was doing my morning run.
And you'd heard just it properly?
Yeah, just casually though, so you know, like, as you're running, just go over it because it's just feel normal.
Yeah.
So even though it was like I'm only doing two hurdles in one run,
yeah,
it's just like you're just doing a little and often, little and often.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing it all the time, I'm used to just running up, going over, carrying on, going around, running up, going over, carrying on, going around.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. And did you prepare like the obviously 3,000 is quite a short race. Did you prepare like for you, like in the previous sprint finish and stuff? Did you like even do sprint finish off the back of a hurdle or anything like that?
Yeah, that's really important because obviously a lot of people can hurdle, but they can't sprint over the hurdles.
Yeah, okay.
So like if you incorporate 200s, like in the summer when you're doing 200s, because you're running way faster than race pace, if you do that over hurdling, you're used to going quick and over hurdles.
Right, yeah, cool.
But when you put the hurdles on the track, obviously you just try and put the last hurdle 50 minutes from the finish line exactly like the race.
Okay, yeah. So you get that last bit of kick off it.
But then the problem we was getting so confident at just going over the hurdles, because obviously if you hit the hurdle, it falls over. When we was doing the races, we were still getting, you know, like anxiety a bit. because it was a big solid bit of wood, so we had to start putting the barriers in training.
Okay, and then did everyone else on the track start getting annoyed of you?
That's the problem, because you have to sort of train when no one else is there because the barriers are so big.
Yeah. Okay.
So what we was gonna do is like literally get chop a steeplechase barrier to make it the size of two lanes.
Oh really?
So you take the feet off.
Yeah.
Then you chop the wood.
Yeah.
Then you put the feet back on.
Oh, and
nice. Then basically you almost got a hurdle sized, but it's a steeplechase barrier.
Ah. Did you do it?
And then it does. No, we didn't do it in the end, but because obviously it cost loads of money, but we didn't get around to doing that. But that was our plan.
Yeah. Okay.
And that would have been more easier to incorporate. But yeah, making it using the actual barrier was really good because obviously it's exactly like the racing, and we made sure that was the last hurdle of the rep.
Okay. Yeah.
So when you're sprinting towards the end, obviously it's the real barrier.
Yeah. Okay. And what about like in terms of your gym stuff? Did you like make any? Did you have to like include anything specific, like mobility wise for your hamstrings or for plyometrics?
So the adjustments I made to my gym stuff was more like single leg squats or single leg lunges and stuff like that. So everything to like coming off the water jump and things like that. When I'm landing, obviously I'm landing on one leg, so I was trying to do stuff like that.
Okay.
Okay. This is when I run. This is how I need to be stronger.
Okay. Yeah. And does that include like plyometrics and stuff? Do you do like hops and jumps and that sort of stuff?
Plyometrics, yeah. But plyometrics, you only do like 6 week or a 4 week block before the summer. But yeah, we just when it's hot, because otherwise you get Achilles problems, isn't it?
Yeah.
Stuff. Okay. But yeah. Fireman's ladder, shuffle, moving your legs.
Yeah, okay.
There's a lot. It's obviously coordination.
Yeah.
When I first started hurdling, I was really bad. I was like really, really bad at hurdling. And then obviously, just because I practice so much, it just becomes easy.
Yeah, but you have to practice.
But you have to do it, where loads of people just get lazy. Or I remember when I went to the steeplechase weekends.
Yeah.
Loads of the runners were big endurance runners, and they would rather do an extra run than do a hurdle session.
Yeah.
Just because that's an hour of time, they rather think, oh, I'm better off doing running. And this is where I said, like, but you still need the technical aspect.
Yeah, you do.
But you say that, but then the Kenyans, I don't say they don't practice, but their technique is unorthodox, but they still got rhythm. So when they go over the hurdle, they don't actually slow down. It still looks smooth.
Yeah. I thought, I don't know if this is true, but like, does it favour steeplechase people that are able to? I thought it like favoured cross country runners, because cross country your run's very choppy. You've got to break up your stride a lot. You've got to move around. You're dealing with surges. Do you think about that, like sort of the changes in momentum? Because obviously a 1500 meter run is all about rhythm and just getting
No, because I remember watching a world champs and there was an Ethiopian that. He was like second or third in the long course of the cross country. So he's like super fit.
Yeah.
And he was in the steeplechase final when he was trying to take on the Kenyans.
Yeah.
And in between the hurdles, he was really good, but going over the hurdles, he was losing so much ground.
Right. Okay.
And then by the last K, he was done.
Yeah. Okay. So you can't just translate that style of running.
You've got to be bouncy and obviously explosive, but it is rhythm, because if you're smooth, you're not wasting loads of energy, like changing pace.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Nice. Well, we'll go on and have a chat with Marianne. It's a different kind of discipline, obviously running 300 miles to running 3000 meters around a track. But let's see what she has to say about her friend.
But one more thing, Sean, obviously me and my friend did a video called the Urban Steeplechaser.
Oh yeah.
I'm going to post it to Sean and he can put it up on the thing.
Yeah, that's you doing these jumps and over barriers and stuff.
I'm doing jumps around London. London.
Okay, we'll send it out. Look out for it. It's going to be on Twitter. It's going to be on our show notes. Have a look for that. Wicked. Here's Marianne. Here we go. So on this week's show, we're talking to Marianne Heading. How are you doing, Marianne?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Good stuff. And you've we're back. Well, the last couple of days has been balmy sunshine in the UK. Has that been a bit of a culture shock from the race you did a couple of weeks ago?
Oh, it has a little bit. I have to say it's been lovely to be relaxing and recovering in that sunshine, though, yeah. And that warm.
And you're based up in Derbyshire?
That's right, yes, just on the edge of the Peak District.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. And the reason I say you're used to sort of colder temperatures, a couple of weeks ago you were experiencing minus 39 degrees C.
That's right, that yes. Right?
The world's coldest and toughest ultramarathon.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
So what was the race? What's the event you did?
So the race itself is the Montane Yukon Arctic Ultra.
Yeah.
And it's based up in the Yukon in Canada, just south of the Arctic Circle. It's 300 miles long, non-stop. Yeah, that's basically it. Really. Wow.
And you, not only did you compete in the race, you won. You were the first person to finish that event. How does it feel? Has it sunk in yet that you were the champion?
It's taken a while. It did feel very surreal and very dreamlike to begin with, and I kept thinking, yeah, I'm going to wake up in a minute. This will all have been a bit of a dream. But no, it's beginning to sink in now.
Yeah,
I think it is. It is getting there.
Yeah, and how many competitors finished the event this year?
So there was only three that finished.
Wow.
This year.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a small field to start with. A lot were going for the longer version.
Yeah.
But you all start together, so you're all in the pack together.
Yeah.
So there's no differentiation at checkpoints, etc., when they record your times in and times out on the board, on the wall.
Yeah.
There's no sort of no differentiation. So it hadn't really occurred to me that I was in the lead. According to the board, I was kind of somewhere around fourth, fifth and sixth most of the time.
Yeah.
But I hadn't really registered that they were in the other race.
So hang on, there was another race that was longer?
Yes.
Jeez.
Yes, there is a 430 mile version of the race.
Wow. Well, 300 miles sounds more than enough to me. 430 sounds absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
So logistically, then were you on your own? What was obviously the amazing terrain, amazing freezing cold. But were you out there on your own for a number of days?
I suppose I was literally alone for periods of up to 15 hours at a time.
Wow.
And that was sort of for me, it was more in the middle part of the race, where the field had spread out. And I would sort of leave a checkpoint. There's obviously people at a checkpoint. And then I might not see anybody, or I might see one person before I reached the next checkpoint. Excuse me. And the checkpoints are well spread, so they take for me at my pace, they were taking anywhere between sort of 11 and 18 hours.
Wow. What are you thinking? How do you stay sane in that amount of time?
I'm not sure that you do, to be honest. I certainly, I had some interesting conversations with myself for a start. But also with the trail markers that are along the way, particularly at night, because they glow. They have a reflector on, so they glow in your headlamp. And in some sections, they're more spread out than others. So, yeah, I did sometimes have a little chat with them as I went past. So, yeah, I'm not sure that sanity is really held on to, but keeping control is key, I think.
And what was the terrain like then? What were you traversing for the 300 miles?
Yeah, it's a mixture of lakes, frozen rivers, woodland, forest, and swamp, really. Yeah. Swampy ground. Obviously all frozen and normally well underneath the snow. This year was a little bit different because there was a section of 73 miles where there was very little snow. So there was that, it became very hard to pull over the the sections of land between the lakes.
Yeah.
Wow. There was a lot of scrub, a lot of branches, a lot of lumpy grass, tussocky stuff. And of course, you're pulling a sledge, so it's very hard to get across that stuff.
Oh, wow. So you're pulling... What do you have then? What are you carrying in the sled there? What do you need to survive on that trip?
You have to have a sleeping system where you can just sleep at the side of the trail safely in those temperatures. So you've got a sleeping bag with a minus 45 degree rating on it, a bivy bag, a sleeping mat, and then on top of that you need to have a stove. Yeah. And a stove that will work at those temperatures, so it needs to be white gas stove. So you need a fuel bottle to go with your stove as well. And then thermos flasks to keep water fluid for as long as possible.
Wow.
And then, of course, all your additional clothing, layering, spare clothes in case you get wet, all that sort of thing, first aid. Repair kit in case anything goes wrong with your sledge or any of the other kit. All those things you have to carry with you.
How much does it weigh then?
I reckon it varies depending on where you are, because of course you've got all your food, which hopefully reduces as you progress. but you also have 3 drop bags where you can top up your food as well.
Yeah.
So your weight kind of goes up and down a bit, but I reckon between 20 and 26 kilos.
Right. Okay. Wow. So you've got to run across uneven territory with no, like you say, no snow, 73 miles. Wow. That must be backbreaking.
No snow, very little. It was. And that's actually what happened to me. I did at one point think I might have to pull out of the race because my back did give up on one side, and I really struggled. I had to redesign my whole pulling system in the end.
How far through the race was that?
That was about 190 miles, 190 something like that. Wow. I was out on the trails when it happened.
Wow. So Marin, I still got over 100 miles to go. How did you manage to talk yourself into doing it? You're feeling that bad. How did you do that?
This was the thing, really. I was about, at a guess, I was about 15 miles from the last checkpoint, and I'd stopped. One of the things I like to do on my race is just to break up my day and to brighten things, and also to keep me well fed. I will stop most days and have a little cookout, so I'll get the stuff out and I'll make some food, some hot food.
Yeah.
And that's what I'd done. And I'd done it, I'd eaten, I'd packed everything up, I put my harness on, and suddenly realised when I stepped forward that I just kind of collapsed on one side rather than being able to move. My back just wouldn't stay rigid enough to pull the sledge.
No.
So I kind of thought, okay, well, I need to get moving because otherwise I'm going to get cold because I've just had a stop. So I literally just grabbed my harness, took it off, and just grabbed it in my left hand, which was the good side, if you like, where my back was okay. And I just walked and pulled it in my hand because it was a decent bit of trail there. It was quite flat. And I just thought, right, what are my options, really? And I thought the first option that came to me was to press my help button on my satellite tracker, which would mean that somebody from the race would come out. But my race was over. That effectively takes you out of the race doing that. And also it was coming up to night time, and the Skidoo drivers don't come out at night unless it's a real emergency. So I thought I'd have to bivvy down and wait anyway. So I thought I'm not going to do that, because if I'm going to bivvy down, then I might as well bivvy down and see if it's better when I get up, kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And see if I can still move, and then at least I'm not sort of ending my race before I want to. And then I thought, okay, so that's an option. What else have I got as an option? And I just thought, well, if I could pull my sledge differently and get the pressure in a different place, maybe that would work. So I tried to think what it was that was stopping me moving. And I decided that what had done it was that rough terrain. And I'd got poles connecting me with ropes, but with poles as well. And it was really pulling side to side on my hips, really jerking and pushing and pulling one side and the other.
Hmm.
So if I could get that more central,
yeah,
that might work. So I took it all apart and got rid of the poles and made a new rope from my repair kit, because I always have spares just in case.
Hmm.
And I made it fix centrally to my harness.
Hmm.
And as soon as I put it on and started, I thought, that is so much better.
Yeah.
So I thought, great, okay, I've solved it. But it was only about 5 minutes before I realised I hadn't solved it, because that was still, my back was still soon back in the same sort of position again. And I thought, the only other thing is I need to pull it with a different part of my body rather than my hips.
Mm.
So I spent a bit of time trying to think if that was possible.
And was it?
It was, and I ended up jigging my harness and putting some knots and doing some adjustments with that, and I managed to make it fit round my shoulders. It had shoulder straps anyway, but they were just hanging onto your hips, so I pulled it all up and tied it all and fastened it so that I could actually pull the sledge from my shoulders. That worked brilliantly.
Yeah.
And I did the rest of the race like that. So
And you say you had to just kind of bivvy down and have a bit of rest. How much sleep in reality are you getting on this trail? Do you manage to get a few hours, or are you fairly sleep deprived too?
I worked out that I had had on average about just over 4 hours per day.
Right.
24 hours.
Wow. How many days were you out there again, sorry, in total?
Seven, just over seven.
7 days, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how was your mind at the end there? On that little sleep, how were you coping?
It is exhausting, but you kind of get used to it. And I think the last, probably 60 miles, I kind of had got in my head there was one more checkpoint before the finish. So it was effectively two legs and I could stop. And in my head at the time, I was stopping forever. I just got to do these two legs and then I can stop forever. And that was most of the time, that was enough to keep me going.
God. and surely, I don't know much about the animals of Canada, but if Hollywood films are to be believed, there's grizzly bears out there. Did these things come through your mind? Were you worried about what you would encounter on the trail?
No, not at all. I think there are a lot of bears out there, but they're all hibernating at that time of year.
Mm.
So it's very, very unlikely that you're going to come across them. There's wolves out there, but they won't, as long as they know you're there, they won't bother you, really. I've heard the wolves out there, and not this year, but in previous years when I've been on the trail, but they don't worry you.
Yeah.
And it's the same with most of the animals. The wolverine, they'll run away if they know you're there, and the chances are when you're trudging and pulling a sledge, they know you're there. And the lynx are the same. They, you know, it's a privilege to sort of see them. So they're probably running away. No, that side of it didn't concern me at all.
And was there anything sort of quite technical, other than obviously the sections that were with non-snow? Were you having to climb and all that sort of thing when you were out there?
There are climbs, yes. And it is hard. I know one of the big things I had to get my head around early on in the race. After the first 30 miles are flat. You're on the river, and then you climb. And you climb right up to the watershed in bits. I suppose it's sort of shorter climbs, and then there's a long climb just before you reach the checkpoint, the remote checkpoint. And on that section, when I started climbing, I thought, this is so much harder than I remember it. I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm never going to do 300 miles. I did find it really challenging to kind of get my head around that and kind of persuade myself that it'll get better. You know? Just push through, it'll get better, honestly, it really will. So then it is sort of undulating the whole way, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And obviously, it sounds like you had quite a few dark moments. Like, how do you mentally prepare for that? And what do you say to yourself? What is your trick for keeping yourself focused on what you're doing?
I think with this particular race, a lot of it is about focus, and it's certainly a lot more about the mind than the body. Mm. I think you can be very, very fit body-wise, but you do need to have the mental power to get through this one.
Yeah.
And I suppose I mean, one of the arguments I had on numerous occasions with myself was when I wanted to stop.
Mm.
And I was saying to myself, why do you want to stop? What do you want to stop for? You know, you're in the middle of nowhere. Nobody's going to help you at this point. So what do you want to stop for? I'm tired. That's no excuse. You know, how are you going to get closer to somewhere where you can have a proper rest? How are you going to get closer to somewhere where there's somebody that can help you if you've genuinely got a problem?
Mm.
Stop's not going to get you there. Keep putting one foot in front of the other. It doesn't matter how fast or slow, just keep putting one foot in front of the other. Don't stop. I'd have that argument over and over again whenever I got to a tired point. And I'd also be saying to myself, if you go another 10 trail markers, or if you cross this lake and get to the other side, then we'll stop and have a hot drink and something to eat.
Right.
You know? And it's just that kind of, I bribe myself, really. I'm just sort of, persuade myself just to keep going. Because I think when it's when the race is so long and can be quite lonely, it's very easy to let yourself sort of just get slower and slower, really. And I was very conscious that I didn't want to do that. I've done it in the past. And I didn't want to do that. I thought, if I'm stopping, if I'm getting slower, then I'll stop altogether and lie down, because I'll get a lot more out of lying down for an hour or two and then getting back up again and moving at a decent pace than sort of struggling just to keep moving.
Right. Okay.
You know, slowly, because you're not really, at least I'll have had a rest if I've laid down.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a lot of these sort of going round and round in discussions with yourself.
And talk about the loneliness. Like, it's interesting to see, like, I don't run anything like those kind of distances and durations, but I'm a person who actually, I quite like my own company. I quite like being on my own. I'm not necessarily someone who has to be around other people all the time. Have you always been like that? Do you like that loneliness and boredom that you get from these kind of events?
Yeah, I do. I've always done a lot on my own, really, since I started. And, you know, I'm out in the Peak District on my own the whole time. And, well, that's not fair. I do go out with my partner, obviously.
Mm.
And I met him on this race a few years ago.
Oh, wow.
So even when we're out together, we can be out for hours and not actually have a conversation. We're just out together, but separately, if you like. It is what I like. I enjoy that being on my own and being my own and being able to just focus on either nothing at all or just it with this race. It's very much just focusing on keeping well, keeping safe and keeping moving.
Yeah, absolutely. I always spoke recently to a guy who, a Swedish guy who went out to, he decided he had enough of the modern world and decided to go and live in Sweden in the forest, just living in a yurt on his own for a few years. And he said, what it made you focus on is the most important things to keep you alive and to keep you going every day. So heat and water and fire became so much more special because that was what you needed in that moment, sort of thing. And that's why he enjoyed being out. And I guess it's the same in the race. You just got to keep going. You enjoy these little, you know, the warmth of a jacket or, you know, the warmth of a sleeping bag more than you would do if you had everything else going on at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly it. And I think that's why, you know, something as simple as getting my stove out and making some noodles and soup and things is such a, it lifts your spirits so much And kind of gets you, even though it's, you know, if I made noodles at home, I probably can't, I'd probably sort of look at it and go, oh, I don't think I'll bother. Out there, it's real, you know, you really enjoy eating it and you know, it's sort of, and even though it's very much, I mean, I can get the stove out, get it going, get the water on, get the noodles made, get it all eaten, get it packed up and back in my sledge and off again in a very little time. But it really does give you a big boost.
And as well as obviously, it sounded from the outside, it sounds really tough thing to do. But so you've explained the bits you like about it. But what, is there anything else? You've been doing it since 2011, is that right?
I've actually been doing it longer than that.
Oh, right. When was your first year?
So the very first year I went out to the race, I went as a volunteer, and that was 2007.
Yeah.
And that was what inspired me to take up running, really.
Wow. So you weren't even a runner then? You just thought you'd go and see what it's about?
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was just so taken with what they were doing. Yeah. I was manning points, basically. That was my role.
Yeah. How did you hear about it then? How did you hear about the event?
Well, my older brother has done these races for longer than me.
Right.
And I heard through him and my sister-in-law, I was out walking with them one day. I'd had various things going on in my sort of home life, and I'd had a lot more. I mean, I hadn't really had that much contact with my brother for a few years, but we'd come back and sort of got together again. I was just saying I needed to use up some annual leave. I didn't want to go on a beach. I didn't want to stay at home. I didn't know what to do. So my sister-in-law sort of suggested perhaps volunteering on this race that my brother was doing.
Yeah.
So that's how I got into it, really. I contacted the race director. I didn't tell him I was related to my brother, because I didn't want him to think I was just going to follow my brother. I wanted to actually take part properly as a volunteer. I was just so amazed by what they were doing.
Yeah.
And there was a little group of them that kept saying, oh, you could do it if you really wanted to. It's, you know, anybody can do it if they really want to. And by the time I got home, I thought, I think I'll go for a little run and see what I can do.
Wow. How old were you then?
Oh, what was I then? 37.
Right, okay. Wow. And you just caught the bugs. What other things did you do this? Do you do other events, similar events, or is just this the main event you do each year?
No, I don't do this every year.
Okay.
I've done this generally every second year, but I have missed one of those as well. So that made it this time it was 4 years since I'd done it.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
There are some others that I've done as well. I've done the Rovaniemi 150.
Yeah.
In Finland. Done that a couple of times, and I did a Rod Trail Invitational.
Right.
I had that as well a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But is it mainly cold, tough, challenging events you like, or is it? Are they all during the winter? These events you're doing?
Yes, those ones are. I have done some others, but I very quickly found that I struggle with the warmth. Even a warm day in the UK, I struggle with running.
Right, okay.
So I'm definitely more adapted for cold. Than
how do you prepare then in the peaks for this kind of event? What's your training look like?
A lot of long days out, whether it's walking or running. Basically getting hours into my legs. And I do make sure that I do walks as well as runs, because a lot of it out there is walking. You can't run.
Yeah.
So I do a mixture of that. And then as it gets closer, I pull a tyre round the village.
Oh, wow.
Which I think gets me a strange reputation. But yeah, I do that just to get used to the weight that you're pulling as well. And there's some good hills around here, so I can make the most of doing those tyre pulling sessions. So from a fitness point of view, that's the preparation that I do. But there's also, I probably spend nearly as much time on kit and food and that sort of thing, doing the preparation in that way as well.
Yeah.
There's some of my kit I adapt or make. So
right.
It's checking on what I've got and what I want to do. I make notes after the races so that I make little adjustments to kit before the next time and that sort of thing.
Oh wow! Okay, and with the food, you're looking at what you can get the most out of in the lightest packages, sort of.
Up to a point, yes. Although I decided to change my approach a bit this time, and I went a lot more for what I would call normal food. Mm. I didn't actually take anything with me this time. I just bought at the supermarket in Whitehorse.
Oh, wow.
And I ate a lot more sort of regular food, because my thing that I'd previously sort of found and realised when I was making notes was a lot of where I've struggled, I haven't been eating a lot. And I think it's because I'd got stuff, but it wasn't stuff I fancied eating.
Right.
So I actually came to the conclusion that to have less specialised, but stuff that I fancied eating would actually get more calories into me than not eating the stuff I'd got.
Right. It's funny because it makes sense, doesn't it? Like keeping it simple and keeping, you know, trying to enjoy it is the best way to try it to succeed.
Exactly. So for example, one of the things I took with me this time that was really good was bags of chocolate chip cookies and oat and raisin cookies.
Yeah.
And when I'd just stop for a big mug of warm water out of my thermos, yeah, and I'd just have a handful of cookies with it, or tea or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're just regular cookies off the shelf, but all that is going in then.
Yeah.
Whereas I've always really struggled to eat a lot of the sort of specialist foods, and the same with, you know, I've already said I would make noodles because I struggle to eat the expedition meals, which are probably more densely packed with calories and all that sort of thing. But actually, to get a full bowl of noodles and soup down is going to give me more. And I always throw cheese and sausage and that into my noodles.
Yeah.
So I'll carry a bag of chopped up sausage and cheese with me. and that's going to give me more benefit than half or eating a few spoonfuls of a expedition meal that I then can't finish.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to kind of ask about, kind of with all this, with the training, these long hours, how do you fit in around work? So you work for the NHS, is that right?
I do, yes. Yeah. So obviously weekends are pretty packed. If I know I'm doing one of these races, I generally start in September upping the hours.
Mm.
And really, pretty much the weekends are wiped out then through to the race.
Mm.
So, and then I'll also make sure I save annual leave so that I can do some long weekends, so I can have some longer back-to-back sessions as well.
And
also so that I can have some days at the weekends doing normal life.
Normal human stuff.
just kind of like, I have to say, I always come up with some kind of plan. And I never manage to stick to it. I never do as much as I've planned, but I've come to the conclusion these days that I'll overplan, and then what I can do will be enough.
Yeah, yeah. And do you manage to train in the week then? Like after work, because obviously it's dark during the winter and things. Are you able to get much done?
No, I don't do a lot of specific training in the week, but I do go out every day on the hills here with my dog, because I have to.
Right, yeah.
I'm out either walking or running. She's a runner too, so either walking or running, and I'll go out early mornings or evenings. I'm not worried that it's dark. I just take my head torch. I've always gone out on the hills in the dark. I enjoy it, really. Yeah. There's nobody else there.
Nice. You're braver than me. I think I'd be worried about falling over, and I suppose if you know the trails, it's all right. But Yeah, I think even with a head torch, I'm always too tentative to really get out and enjoy it. But hey, but if you were giving advice to one of the listeners who would be interested in tackling an event like this, sort of a multi-day event, perhaps somewhere where you're going to encounter, you know, having to sleep in perhaps sub-zero temperatures, what advice would you give to a first timer who's looking at a challenge like this?
So I'm thinking kind of specifically this. This race, and I think the first thing I would say is remember that a lot of it is in the mind. So make sure you've planned and organized everything, your kit and everything. As well, I would say make sure you include walking in your training, because you won't be running it all. You might run some bits. Get plenty of hours in your legs for the distance. It's more, don't worry too much about the mileage you're doing, but make sure you've got the hours in your legs. Make sure you're organized, get to know your kit. Don't change things or buy things just because somebody else tells you it's great, because it's very individual and you need to know it works for you.
Okay.
So test things, try out, all that sort of thing, really.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds wise. If running 300 miles in sub-zero temperatures can ever be wise, but it sounds wise in terms of preparing for it. But our final question, I've kept you quite a lot of time here, but our final three questions are quick fire questions, which we ask to everybody that we interview. So here we go. The three are, the first one is, if you could be anywhere running now, where would it be?
I have to say it would be here at home in the Peak District.
Yeah. Fantastic. Second question is, recommend our listeners something.
Okay. I would recommend the Montane Yukon Arctic Ultra as a race, but appreciating that it isn't for everybody.
Is there a particular brand of sort of bivy bag you use, or is that again a particular thing that people should look into? Because I've always wondered sort of what sort of sleeping bags I have to buy. Do you use a particular brand, or is there you know, a variety that you use?
Yeah, as far as bivvies go, I have used a couple of different ones, both of which were Rab.
Right.
And sleeping bags, again, I've used a couple of different ones, but both of them were Lestra.
Okay, Lestra. But
that's just, you know, how it worked for me. That's what I got hold of. I don't particularly know if they're the best, or I know other people use other things.
Yeah, okay.
On the rain.
Good starting point, though. And then
our
final question is, what, in your opinion, is the greatest endurance performance of all time?
So I had a little think about this, and I think I'm not going to come up with a single performance as such.
That's fine.
But I think it's anybody who has completed the Iditarod Trail Invitational 1,000 mile race.
Whoa. Where is that? Sorry, what country?
That one is in Alaska.
Yeah.
And that also happens in February March, at the coldest time of year, in all the snow. And ice, and that follows the sled dog trail across Alaska for 1,000 miles, Anchorage to Nome.
Wow. Okay. Well, one thing I failed to ask you earlier actually was what's your next challenge? Is that the next challenge? Are you revealing something now?
No. I don't. I think 1,000 miles is well out of my league. I don't know what my next challenge is. I've been focused on this. I wanted to do this 300 and do it better than I had previously. So I kind of haven't thought as far as that yet.
Well, you're allowed some time off. After 300 miles, I think you can take a few weeks to decide what's next. So, yeah, don't rush it. Excellent. Well, lovely to chat, Marianne, and good luck with work and with your next goal and next challenge, and hopefully we'll catch up with you soon.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So nice interview there with Marianne. Crazy challenge. Should we do that, Jermaine? Is that our next challenge after this this half marathon we've been doing is our next challenge to go and run 300 miles in sub-zero temperatures.
When caramel gets cold, it goes stiff. That don't happen. So that's a no-no.
At what temperature does caramel freeze?
Sub-zero. I'm tropical.
So sorry, Marianne, we aren't going to follow your footsteps in that race. We have to find a different challenge to accommodate the
fine print of the sidekick. Yeah, the fine print of the sidekick.
Exactly. Nice. We've had a review. And it's a nice one. If anyone didn't know, if we always hark on about reviews, when we moved providers a while back, we now are on the family of Audio Boom, who are very good. Thanks, Audio Boom, for producing this podcast for us. But we lost all of our reviews. So we worked really well. Everyone did some nice things for us. They sent a review through. And we went back to zero. So and reviews are important to help grow the podcast. We need to help it grow to keep doing it. So, yeah, that's why we always ask. We're sorry to hark on about it, but we always ask. If you did a review before, have a look, see if you could do another one. If not, we're not going to stop bothering you again about it. But anyway, we had a nice one from Carhul, who has actually, this is the second one he's done. So thanks, Carhul. Nice one. He said, brilliant podcast as always. That's the title. And then he says, podcast as always, guys. Really informative and lots of banter. Careful on them slopes, Caramel. You might have to sub, or Sean might have to sub me in. And he's a little winky face emoji. So yeah,
just bring it.
And that's from Carhul, the Irish runner studying in Middlesbrough. So Carhul, my baby is Irish, so we've got a tie there. My wife's Irish. I support Middlesbrough, which is where you're studying. So there's a link there, and. That's why I can't think of any links, but we're closely tied, Carhul. If ever Caramel shies off, you'll be the first one I'm calling. We've got too many links.
Whoa.
He also finishes off the review by putting hashtag best running podcast, hashtag white devil, hashtag caramel kid. Nice one, Carhul. Thanks for that. And keep
cheers,
up.
Dude.
Look after Middlesbrough. Keep it nice. It's not a particularly nice place to be. It's all right. I used to go out there quite a lot when I was a kid, but anyway.
slagging it off.
Well, my family are from Middlesbrough. I kind of technically am I've got half Middlesbrough blood in me or whatever. So, yeah, I can slag off a little bit. It's safe. It's fine. But anyway, yeah, good luck with your sitting about doing nothing, Jermaine. You're relaxing for this week before the big half.
I'm doing fine, but I'm on late this week as well. So I finish at 1 o'clock every morning this week.
Jesus, that's not going to help us, is it?
Someone late is getting grief. Living all the drunks from the party last week.
If you are partying in London this week, give Jermaine a break. He's got to run a fast half marathon on Sunday. We need to win this battle of the podcasts. Don't forget to enter, guys, if you can. If you're going to do a half marathon, don't waste it. I know you're doing it for yourself, but don't waste it. You could do the half marathon, then just say it's done for us. Do you know what I mean? You're not wasting it. So yeah, thanks for that. Nice one. Right, we'll leave everyone to it, and we'll see everyone next week.
See you, people.
Bye-bye.
Bye.